So in this talk, I will continue with the idea that we want to practice so we can recognize the path of practice. Not so much necessarily the recognize it through the goal, but recognize it each step along the way. So as we follow our path of Dharma practice, that we know where the next step is, the next thing to meet, next thing to do. And this discovery of the path is by taking a respectful and careful look at the karmic streams, the karmic activity that keeps us caught in karmic activity. And to look at it carefully in such a way that what gets revealed is the Dharma path. Next step. And we discover in doing so the Dharma stream, the currents of our lives that unfold and move, carry us, that are very different than the currents, the streams of karma, which I don't know if it carries us as much as it pushes us along. And this morning I mentioned that our discursive thinking, the thinking that's more of a conversation we're having in our head, or a grand scene that we're, if we think in images, with a whole storyline. That this is one of the most recognizable places, or most easiest places to see the working of karma. That certain kind of karmic activities have karmic consequences. And an easy way to understand that is that certain activities have very powerful conditioning factors. They shape our disposition, they shape our way of thinking, they shape our way of seeing the world, they shape the way in which we understand ourselves, they shape the way we understand other people. They shape the desires we have and the aversions we have and many, so many ways in which we interact with the world can be shaped by the small and big ways in which we act in body, speech, and mind, where there is some clinging or attachment that goes along with it. And clinging is probably kind of a nice word because you take this plastic cling wrap and you just can't get it to unstick from itself sometimes if it gotten bunched up. That's a certain way of thinking where there's clinging involved in it. And it kind of, the whole thinking mechanism then is caught in the web of the clinging or perpetuates itself. And it kind of greases the gears of clinging, attachment. It kind of smooths out the grooves. So it becomes easier and easier, more and more likely that we'll participate in some kind of clinging and attachment. So there's a stickiness. And not all of this attachment is necessarily bad news because the karmic streams are of two kinds. There's that which is clearly, obviously brings suffering, and that which actually can benefit from us. We become better people because of the impressions that are created in the mind, the heart, from the skillful things we do, the beautiful things we do. And it's possible to karmically create a beautiful heart and beautiful mind with acts of generosity and love and compassion. But when it's karmic stream, there's always some kind of something that's attachment involved that perpetuates that kind of thinking. So even with great acts of sincere generosity, there might be somewhere in the mix some way in which we are attached to some image or idea of who we are. And that's where the stickiness is. And even if the generosity brings us a lot of happiness, we're still feeding this perpetual cycles of certain kinds of clinging, maybe invisible at times. So when we sit down to meditate, when we sit to be mindful of our experience, we run into our karma. We run into the consequences of this, not only consequences of this conditioning, this momentum of clinging, but we also run into the karma in the sense that the continued doing of it. It's a continual, endless cycle of this kind of doing. And we run into it because meditation, mindfulness, is a state of non-reactivity. And so as we practice non-reactivity, what gets highlighted is our reactivity. Now, one common response, practicing non-reactivity and seeing reactivity, is to be reactive. And then as we keep practicing, we begin to realize it doesn't work to react to our reactivity. It doesn't work to become agitated by our agitation. It doesn't work to take offense with our frustrations. It doesn't work to be afraid of our fears. It doesn't work to crave freedom from craving. So you can't just somehow keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. So at some point when we sit long enough, we will see our karmic streams and how this works. And the idea is not to see it as bad news, but to see it as a door, as a potential, as a place to discover the dharmic path. And it's not necessarily easy to discover that, to find that, but that's the task that we're here to do. So one of the the manifestations of this karmic stream, when it leads to suffering or keeps us in the cycles of suffering, is what I talked about yesterday, the dramatic terms of grief, lamentation, pain, despair, and anguish. And these experiences, ways of, whether these English words are the right translation, you know, so be a little bit careful not to assume that I'm using them in the way you define them. But how they're defined is they are states of suffering where we get it, where we're attached to something. We're attached to an idea of self. We're attached to our desires, our aversions, our delusions. And so the suffering takes on a heightened intensity because it comes along with some kind of clinging. It can take the form sometimes of clinging to the suffering itself. The Buddha talked about people becoming enchanted by their suffering. Way too interested in it. Even taking our suffering as being really important is maybe part of this world of karma. We don't want to dismiss it, but also we don't want to be enamored with it, or so, you know, or the kind of intense interest that aversion to it takes. So to begin to shift the way we look at suffering, and this is really the task of mindfulness, to begin seeing it, knowing it, being aware of it, being present for it in a simple way as we can. And that's what I said yesterday, is that we discover the Dharma path, the Dharma stream, when rather than seeing it in these big terms like anguish and despair, we just very simply see, this is pain. Almost as if the content of it, the reason it's there, the story behind it, for the time being, while we meditate, is not something we have to be so concerned with. It kind of cuts through a lot of the discursive mind, a lot of the conversational mind, a lot of the story mind. When we say, it's just pain. It's pain. And then maybe it's a little bit easier to be present for it in a respectful way, in the kind of respect that can't happen if we're clinging to it or attaching to it or reacting to it, because the vision is too clouded by the reactivity and the clinging. So to shift the orientation to see it in a new way. To go further along this line, when we travel through these different 12 steps of dependent origination, at some point we might recognize that our intense karmic suffering is there because of conditions. We might see it connected to attachments, to clinging. It might see that it comes along with clinging. And those are conditions which really perpetuate the intensity of it. And it's and so the way that this is talked about in the ordinary chain of dependent arising is that the condition for this grief, lamentation, despair, and anguish is something called birth. And how I understand it in this working of the mind, it's inhabiting, stepping into being born into our attachments, our clingings, our greeds, our hatreds. It's one thing to have them arise, but it's another thing to inhabit them, to have a kind of commitment to them, to take on an identity. It's one thing to have an identity, and some of the identities are completely appropriate to have, but it's another thing to become attached to it or inhabit it, hold on to it. And so this process of this extra thing that's happening here is not just having an attachment, but being grabbing it, holding on to it. This extra thing we do of really, I like the language of inhabiting it. So how are we born into this, born into the karmic stream of desires and clinging? So without this condition, without this precondition of being born into the attachment, being born into this clinging, then there would not be this intensity around our suffering, where it's, you know, grief, lamentation, despair, and anguish. I should probably stop saying that. It's probably depressing to hear it too many times. And so the intensity comes from this inhabiting, this holding it in a certain way. And without this condition, we wouldn't have the burden of clinging coming along with us, the burden of holding on to identity, a sense of self, an idea of self. And we see that when we get fixated on some idea of self and who I am, who I'm supposed to be, who I'm not even, it leads to a fragility, it leads to a heaviness, it leads to a vulnerability. It's so easy for the world to threaten that. But if we don't take birth into these identities, then we're not invested in them so much, or not at all. And so that part of who we are is not so easily threatened. I think of this birth quality, this condition of being born, as adding agitation and fragility to a difficult world. The world's difficult enough. And when we are born somehow in these kinds of states, we're adding difficulty to it. I think of it as like filling a clear lake with mud. The clear lake becomes born as a muddy lake. But if we start, again, seeing the karmic stream, seeing the karmic patterns, seeing the underlying conditions for our suffering, we see how clinging and grasping and really being, in some ways, not consciously necessarily, but in some ways, committed to our attachments. That very seeing allows us to see that it's possible to be not to be free of it. Not free necessarily that those attachments go away, but that the in the awareness of it, the seeing of it, there is a kind of freedom. There's ease, there's space. There's another way, another possibility. Something that gives hope. Oh, I don't have to live my life that way. There is another way of living a life. No one ever told me this. I thought I just had to go along with the status quo. But then if we start practicing mindfulness and see, actually, there's a gap, there's a pause in all this. There's a little distance or space. And I see it. Oh, that's what it's about. And in that seeing, in that lightening of the load, there's a glimmer of hope, a glimmer of a new possibility. And this is the second of the liberative steps of dependent arising, which is called faith, sada. And one of the things that we then have faith in, and faith sometimes means belief in English, and one of the things that we come to believe in is hopefully a really committed or a strong belief, really this belief is worth holding on to. And that's the belief that attachments don't work. It doesn't work to cling. It doesn't work, this grasping, the reactivity that I live by, the resentments I kind of bring with me everywhere I go, the aversion, the cynicism, the anxiety that I pile on top of my situation. You know, this is not really working to do this. It's a belief that this doesn't work anymore. And the Dharma path is partly conditioned on this new belief. The old way, the karmic way, doesn't really work. It's you know, I can make it better, I can improve on it. And as, you know, it's a little bit like you can improve on it in all kinds of wonderful ways. But it's possible, it's a bit like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. So with faith involves this no longer being enamored or committed to the old way. So we become confident in what not to trust. We no longer trust perhaps the whole way we hold on tight to a certain identity, certain concept, idea of self, or an identity that we put on other people. Faith also means to be inspired. And we're inspired by what is opening, inspired by that gap or the distance now we have from the clinging, the intuition or sense or the experience of non-clinging. This is inspiring. This is quite something. And then have faith in this practice, faith in this new possibility. But that faith, the condition for that faith to arise is the first step of liberative dependent arising. Suffering, but not just suffering, but being able to meet the suffering in a simple, maybe ordinary way. To meet our suffering without making it heavy or without making it, interpreting it as a catastrophe or a crisis even. Without using the challenges we have to define ourselves as a reflection upon who I am. And I'm embarrassed that I'm suffering this way. I better not tell anyone and hope no one notices. We don't have to do that anymore. Many years ago, was a meeting with a group of senior Buddhist teachers in America. And some of them had been practicing for 40 years back then. And the topic for the discussion was, what are you practicing with these days? And they talked very honestly and very openly, relaxedly, completely willing to be transparent about their struggles. Some of them had struggles, all kinds of, you know, after all these years, they still had their personal struggles. But what was remarkable was how relaxed they were about it, how easy and light they referred to it. It's kind of matter of fact. It was almost like, yeah, this goes on for me, and you're asking me about it, so I'll tell you what it is. But, you know, I'm practicing with it, but it's like, yeah, and today the sky is blue. It had this lightness to it and ease to it. So beginning our suffering without clinging to anything, without grasping, without an intense wanting it to be different. Without identifying, without being entangling identity with it, making an identity out of it. So when we can become aware without agitation, we might be agitated, but we discover that awareness for maybe even only a few moments can know in an unagitated way. That's a guide to what's possible. And then that can give rise to a certain kind of confidence, faith, hope, inspiration, belief about this new way, this dharmic way to be. And that faith is like the lotus seedling that's beginning to grow up out of the mud, the muddy waters. This is a remarkable metaphor in Buddhism, the lotus that grows up out of the mud. It's a metaphor of not dismissing the mud, not dismissing the suffering and the karmic stuff, but really practicing in the middle of it so we see it clearly. And then this other thing happens, gets born. And that's beginning of that being born is the quality of faith. And it's said that faith has some common elements to clinging and grasping. They are both a form of holding onto something. They're both a form of wanting something. So the fact that we want something, the fact that we're holding something does not make it karmic. It's possible to hold something in an open hand, lightly, as opposed to grasping it tightly. It's possible to want something without being invested in outcome, without making a self out of it, defining ourselves, improving ourselves, and without clinging to what we want. So faith is a kind of holding of something that's valuable, is a little bit of a desire towards with something that's precious and valuable. Your freedom. And faith is important because the paradigm shift from the karmic stream to the dharmic stream, it can be quite challenging. We get a lot of messages from our society that the karma stream is what where we're supposed to be. That's where we have to navigate. And we don't have a lot of examples of a life of the dharmic stream that can show us that this is a good way to go and worthwhile way to go. But more intimately, shifting paradigms can lead to boredom, can lead to discouragement, to anger, and to depression. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that this is all, you know, there are rose petals on the path waiting for you. Just skip along. But when you make a big change, the bigger that change is in the momentum of your life and where the energy is going and where the belief has been going and where what you've been trusting, and you're now ready to go another way, it can seem at first that this not doing, this simply being aware and stopping the momentum that you did before, it's maybe a little bit like, drinking a lot of coffee for a long time and then stopping. And then there's a withdrawal period that feels uncomfortable for a while. And, so some of us keep ourselves caffeinated with clinging, caffeinated with aversion. And so caffeinated with all this game and play of self and me, myself, and mine, and what people think of me, praise and blame and all this. And to let the, and to stop that, there's a transition time we have to go through. Sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's more difficult. But faith is what sees us through. And faith is a holding to something, keeping something close. It's a desire which is worth keeping. But then be careful, don't cling to that desire. One of the consequences of this kind of paradigm shift is that we're not so as concerned as we were before with our suffering, our discomforts. And that allows us to stay on the with the meditation practice and not be sidetracked so much by the suffering. And of course, sometimes we want to bring our mindfulness to our suffering and discover the door to freedom there, the non-reactivity, the non-agitation, just seeing it. But it's very easy to get over-interested in our suffering. I would venture to say that most people are too interested in their suffering. Some people are not interested enough. Sometimes you have to get them interested. But I think most people, they're too interested. And so I'm saying this to you as meditators, and that's the context for this talk, is you in meditation. So maybe some of what I'm saying is not so easily applied to the rest of your life, but in meditation, sometimes this faith in the practice takes the form of, I'm just going to stay here with my breathing. I'm going to stay focused and concentrated. I'm not going to get sidetracked by my suffering, my thoughts, my karmic streams. Maybe they don't have to be given so much attention. Just hold the course. So if your primary practice is mindfulness of breathing, stay with that. If you have another primary practice that helps you get concentrated or helps you really get stable in your mindfulness, hold the course. keep doing it. And of course, you know, if we really need to pay attention to something else, of course we do that. But don't do it too easily. Don't do it. Don't kind of abandon yourself in the practice for your suffering too easily. Don't add mud to the muddy waters. So within reason, it can be very nice to stay, to discover some kind of feeling for non-reactivity, non-clinging, calmness, a certain kind of stillness. In awareness and presence and beingness. And with this stillness, this modicum of calmness, in the midst of our agitation, see if you can let that calmness and stillness be the flavor of your mindfulness practice, your concentration practice. Be mindful. Calmly. Be mindful with a kind of stillness in the mindfulness. Be mindful with a sense of faith. And just being simple with the practice, one moment after the other. The faith that arises from knowing something well, knowing, yes, I'm suffering. I'm not denying my difficulties, my discomfort. I'm here on this path to find the freedom. But now that I've discovered something about this new way of being with suffering, this new paradigm, and have faith in the potential here, I'm inspired. I'm motivated to not get derailed so easily, not to be tricked by my clinging, to get involved in the clinging world. And sometimes if we're navigating, negotiating, fixing, engineering what we think is our difficulties in practice, oddly enough, we've been tricked into the world of attachment, clinging. It's like this clinging has this wonderful Aikido move. It's, you know, we cling, we hurt, it suffers. It says, come here, my friend. And if you cling a little bit really well here, you'll get rid of me. If you get really identified and really be the person who has to solve your own problems, and so you show up with a strong sense of self, the strong clinging or desire, and all the engineering project to get free of suffering is you didn't realize it. You've been tricked into that world. To continue the karmic stream. So faith that allows us to settle back, the faith that allows us to stay grounded, faith that allows us to kind of feel a sense of commitment to the simplicity of step by step by step, the next moment, this moment, meeting it, this breath, this out-breath, this in-breath. I started this talk by talking about not the big goal of practice, but the importance of finding the next step of practice, the next moment. And then holding the course, staying there, staying there. And part of the advantage of this is that not all suffering, but not a small amount of it, kind of dissolves on its own. if you don't feed it. And one of the ways to feed it is to try to get rid of it. And if you just kind of hold your course lovingly, compassionately, caringly, with mindfulness of breathing, maybe breathing with your challenges, breathing with your difficulties, so they're not ignored, but they're not given a lot of attention. They're just there on the side. You know they're there, but they don't really need a lot of attention. And you just keep breathing in and breathing out, walking meditation step and step and step and step. And one of the reasons why this works is that our attention is one of the most powerful forms of food for what the mind does. And if your attention goes into the karmic stream, you're feeding the karmic stream. If your attention doesn't go into the karmic stream, but instead goes into the stream of Dharma, Dharma stream, or into the mindfulness stream, that food of attention is feeding the Dharma stream. Slowly, bit by bit. And and so if you are no longer feeding the karmic stream, it runs, or fueling it maybe, it runs out of gas eventually. It's, you know, it weakens and disappears. I had a certain delusion that I practiced with on many retreats, where I had some karmic challenge, some challenge that was going on that I thought I should get, you know, I should really work and practice to get rid of. But the particular delusion was that if I really practiced well, I would see it go away. And so many times I'd come back from lunch or come back from a walking period or something else, and I'd look around, it's gone. Where did it go? I didn't get to see it go away. And that was really loosened me up a lot around us. It's kind of excessive, you know, attachment or preoccupation with needing to get rid of it. And so I learned, okay, I just do my practice. It's not my responsibility when it goes away. I just do my step-by-step, moment-by-moment practice and hold the course, being very careful not to feed the karmic stream, but to know the karmic stream is the karmic stream, and to know that when needed, non-reactive, quiet awareness of it is the paradigm shift that brings us into the Dharma stream. And to have faith in that shift is one of the great gifts, one of the great possibilities. And some people will even say that they, you know, they have been reborn into the Dharma when their faith is strong enough. They feel like it's such a radical change in who they are. There's a kind of rebirth. So you can either be born into the karmic stream, into inhabit it, or it's possible to be born in a certain kind of way into the dharmic stream. And I don't know if we inhabit it, but ultimately we become it. So my hope is from this talk that it motivates you to be interested in engaged in the simple ongoing step-by-step movements of practice in sitting, in walking, and also in the transition times. And maybe it's, as I said this morning, maybe it's in the transition times where you want to be most careful about not wandering off into the karmic streams too easily. And the chances are high that if you're thinking about something which has nothing to do with what you're doing in the moment, chances are high your thinking is in the karmic stream. And then if you want to do the continuity of practice, you take a deep breath, acknowledge what's happening, relax, and perhaps you'll find the faith to return to the moment-to-moment, step-by-step, what I'm doing right now, being here fully with what I'm doing. And it's remarkable if you do that, how little space is left for all the ruminations that undermine you. So, may you be reborn in the Dharma, in mindfulness and awareness, and have faith in that. Thank you.